welcome back to the second half of Earth First Radio. I'm Uncle Dennis, and there's more important information coming up, so keep that pencil and recycled paper handy. And we're going to get into our commentary right now, as we do, starting off the second half of every show. This is from the Associated Press. No indication of who wrote it, but it's titled, "Conservationists Warn That Many Primate Species Could Vanish Immediately. Dozens of primate species are teetering on the brink of oblivion in a new extinction emergency that has left scientists astonished and angry. It's all been happening at a time when we knew better," said David Chivers of Cambridge University, who's a gibbon expert, who has chased the world's smallest ape through treetops from the Himalayas to the islands of Indochina. "I've spent 30 years on this, and now we don't seem to be getting anywhere," Chivers said. "It's ridiculous. No primate has gone extinct in the 20th century. It was a remarkable feat of endurance for humankind's closest relatives at a time when 100 species, especially cats, bats, insects, and birds, were vanishing every day. But what had been hailed as a conservation triumph is beginning to look like a sad illusion. Leading field biologists, veterinarians, and zoo curators will meet to devise emergency strategies. New estimates suggest that 10% of the world's 608 primate species and subspecies on three continents are critically imperiled. Renewed surges of deforestation and poaching in the 1990s, as well as shrinking genetic diversity, suddenly are thinning the ranks of many species to just a few hundred individuals or a few dozen. At any moment, they could vanish forever. An additional 10% of primate species might not be in immediate jeopardy, but will disappear without vigorous protection," the researchers warn. In a few cases, scientists aren't even sure if certain species still exist. In the Ivory Coast and Ghana on West Africa, farming has all but eliminated the obscure red colobus monkey, and its monkeys swamped by eliminating the monkey's swampy habitat. Or the golden-headed langur on Vietnam's Cat Ba Island. This rare leaf-eating primate has been a favorite target of hunters who sell its bones, tissues, and organs as traditional medicines. "We're doing surveys to find them. There are some we haven't seen in a few years," said Russell Mittermeier, president of Conservation International, a nonprofit based in Washington, D.C. "We've arrived at a critical time for the world's primates," said William Constant of the World Conservation Union. "Close to 20% stand a reasonable chance of disappearing in the next 20 years unless we take decisive action. What action will be effective? Some ideas likely to be discussed are artificial insemination of females in laboratory-engineered embryos and the introduction of the wild of families born in captivity. Primates are the highest order of mammals. Besides humans, they include apes, monkeys, and prosimians, a suborder that includes more primitive lemurs and tarsiers. Primates have been in worsening trouble for decades as the world's population crashed the $6 billion person barrier. Many of the world's foremost field researchers, including pioneer chimpanzee expert Jane Goodall, switched their focus from science to salvation as their cherished research subjects began disappearing. According to Conservation International's latest census, 92 countries are home to primates, but four, Brazil, Madagascar, Indonesia, and the Congo, account for two-thirds of all the primates in the wild. Researchers blame recent losses primarily on political unrest and commercial exploitation of the creatures' habitats. They say none of the four countries consistently enforces timber mining or wildlife protection measures, even in their national parks. It is no coincidence that endangered primates live in environments under assault. Researchers say they need to secure stronger commitments from governments and corporations using wild land in those countries. There will never be enough rangers to protect an area, said George Rabb, director of the Brookfield Zoo in Chicago. The nations have to believe it is in their benefit to protect their wild resources. Indonesia, home to 10% of the world's primate species, already has the world's largest timber exporter. Wildcat loggers are illegally doubling the nation's timber cutting, and oil palm plantations are deforesting millions of additional rainforest acres. Among the hardest hit species are orangutans and gibbons. On the Indonesian island of Java, perhaps 400 silvery gibbons remain. On Sumatra and Borneo, the orangutan population has been reduced by 90%. In the Brazilian Amazon, loggers cut 11,000 square miles of rainforest annually, an area bigger than the state of New Hampshire. And near Rio de Janeiro, five species of tamarins, capuchins, and muriquis are crowded onto the remaining scrap of Atlantic coast rainforest. In Africa, the biggest threat is poaching. Conservationists say hunters are slaughtering entire populations to supply urban markets with exotic meats known as bushmeat. Among their targets are the drill, Schlatter's Gunion, and the white-naped mangabey. It's disgusting that people are eating their closest wild relatives, Chivers said. And it's not a matter of people just trying to survive, it's middlemen trying to get richer. To some degree, the crisis is a scientific numbers game. In the past century, scientists discovered 200 new primate species and subspecies, and in February, scientists expanded the total by another 35. They based reclassifications on fine differences in appearance, molecular behaviors that are passed on between generations. For example, gorillas are now split into two species, the eastern and the western, and further divided into five subspecies. Scientists declared 200 gorillas living among the Nigerian-Cameroon border to belong to a new subspecies named the Cross River Gorilla. Such smaller groups are much harder to sustain biologically, so they leap atop the protection list. But scientists say the reclassifications more accurately reflect nature's diversity and add urgency to protection efforts. In the nick of time, we have realized these gorillas are distinct, said John Oates of Hunter College in New York City, just before it is finally too late to save them. And that's today's commentary from the Associated Press. Let's move on into more animal news. Extinctions not random threaten thousands of species. A new study indicates that thousands of at-risk bird and mammal species worldwide could eventually become extinct due to the non-random nature of extinctions. The findings were reported in the April 14th issue of the journal Science. Our findings suggest that extinction events result in a further loss of biodiversity, possibly even the extinction or threatening of thousands of additional species animals, including large charismatic ones such as rhinos and chimpanzees, said John Gittleman, associate professor of biology at the University of Virginia, who was one of the study's authors. And recent findings from a study conducted by the Nature Conservancy and the Association of Biodiversity Information show that the Southwest Virginia and Northeastern Tennessee areas are home to the largest number of imperiled species on the U.S. mainland. In the study Precious Heritage, the status of biodiversity in the United States, only Hawaii's island of Kauai ranks higher. In Southwest Virginia and Northeastern Tennessee, 27 species are endangered or imperiled. 8 of these are associated with caves and 19 with rivers and streams. Freshwater mussels are the most at risk. 18 types of mussels are presumed to have already gone extinct. While many mussel populations are declining, some are doing quite well. On the Clinch River, where the mussel diversity has declined from 60 to 40 species, populations upstream of the Virginia state line are in decline, while those in the lower portion of the river are healthy. Scientists are uncertain what is causing the decline. Virginia Tech is working with the Nature Conservancy to create a mussel propagation center, which will propagate mussels to augment natural populations. And U.S. Senator John Warner, a Virginia Republican, and Colonel Alan Carroll of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers announced recently that the Embray Dam in Fredericksburg, Virginia, will be removed in 2002 to restore the Rappahannock River and the habitat it provides for shad and other fish. Warner and Carroll joined community members and conservationists for a shad lift. Participants formed a human chain around the dam, collecting the shad in buckets and hauled the fish around the dam, demonstrating the impediment the 20-foot-high dam poses to migrating fish. Removing the dam will open more than 170 miles of spawning habitat in the Rappahannock River and its tributaries to fish such as the American shad and striped bass. Embray Dam removal is significant because it's overwhelmingly supported by the local community and public officials. It will serve as a model for other river restoration efforts across the nation, according to Margaret Bowman, Senior Director of Dam Programs for American Rivers. And the Alabama sturgeon, a rare fish of prehistoric origins, has now been listed as endangered under the Endangered Species Act. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service decision was based on the species' small population size and its inability to sustain a viable population. The Alabama sturgeon has disappeared from 85% of its historic range, and biologists attribute the decline of the species to overfishing, loss and fragmentation of its habitat due to navigation-related development, and a decline in water quality. Just 5 Alabama sturgeon have been captured in the last 4 years, despite intensive efforts by federal and state biologists. 2 Alabama sturgeons, both male, remain in captivity. The listing requires federal agencies to protect the species and its habitat and make additional funding available to support recovery, including grants to state conservation programs. So the Alabama sturgeon, definitely endangered. And a wildlife refuge plan aims to protect Florida panthers. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has released its final comprehensive conservation plan for the Florida Panther National Wildlife Refuge. The plan will guide operation of the refuge for the next 10 to 15 years. The plan's benefits include providing optimal habitat conditions on the refuge, conducting research to determine panther habitat needs, and protecting off-refuge lands through cooperative land management actions, partnering with both private landowners to improve their lands for panther use, and developing programs that promote public understanding of the panther's needs. And there'll be a short interpretive trail in an area of low panther use will be created to promote understanding of the mosaic of habitats found on the refuge, but they have decided to ban deer hunting on the wildlife refuge. Now, I wonder why they even allowed hunting on a refuge anyway, but they do. And also from Florida, gopher tortoises live underground in Florida's sandy scrub and pinelands in carefully constructed tunnels. More than 360 animal species depend on these burrows for their food and shelter. According to the Tampa Tribune of 422, this habitat is being rapidly paved over to make room for houses, shopping malls, parking lots, and roads. The gopher tortoise is federally protected as a threatened species, except in Florida, where it is listed by the state as a species of special concern. Developers who wish to build upon tortoise habitat need to get an incidental take permit, but those permits are referred to as a license to kill by conservationists, and with good reason. The Florida Fish and Game Commission, charged with protecting the tortoise, has issued over 700 such permits since the program began in 1986, resulting in an estimated 36,000 tortoise deaths. The Suncoast Parkway and Disney's Community of Celebration alone killed several thousand individuals. When you look at the trends, they're going down very fast, said David Auth of Sierra Club. We're going toward a situation where you'll have an endangered species and they won't be able to develop at all. And the Fund for Animals has declared victory in its six-year-old campaign to list the Australian koala under the Endangered Species Act of the United States. In yesterday's Federal Register, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service established a final rule listing the koala as a threatened species throughout its range in Australia. The Fund for Animals and Australians for Animals originally filed a petition to list the koala 6 years ago. And in other news, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has listed the Tibetan antelope, or chiru, as proposed for listing under the U.S. Endangered Species Act. Tibetan antelope populations are declining because large numbers of chiru are being killed illegally for their wool, known in the international marketplace as chatoosh, or king of wool. Chatoosh is considered to be one of the finest animal fibers in the world, and since the 1980s, expensive chatoosh shawls and scarves have become high fashion status symbols in the West. This international commercial demand for chatoosh has brought about an increased poaching and fuels a lucrative illegal trade which thrives despite conservation and enforcement efforts of the Chinese government. Tibetan antelope are always killed to collect their wool. No cases of capture and released wool collection are known, nor is naturally shed wool collected from shrubs and grass tufts, as is often claimed by people within the chatoosh trade. And since 1979, international commerce in chatoosh and products derived therefrom has been prohibited. And so if you're out there on the web and you see something that says it's chatoosh, don't buy it. And call eBay and tell them not to sell it, too. In Arizona, responding to a court order, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has designated 898 miles, that's about 1,500 kilometers of rivers and streams in Arizona and New Mexico, as critical habitat for two threatened fish species, the spiked dace and the loach minnow. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service first designated critical habitat for the two species in 1994. However, the Tenth Circuit Federal Court determined that such critical habitat designations must comply with the National Environmental Policy Act. As a result, in March of 1998, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service rescinded the designated critical habitat. Responding to a lawsuit filed by the Center for Biological Diversity, the U.S. District Court ordered the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to reconsider the designation of critical habitat, perform all NEPA compliance requirements, and develop an Endangered Species Act biological and economic justification. They've done that. By definition, The designation of critical habitat is limited in its impact. As a threatened species, the spycase and the loach minnow already are protected wherever they occur. And this critical habitat designation will contribute to their conservation by helping federal agencies determine where they have to protect them. 898 miles protected. And the fate of Minnesota's wolves is in the hands of Governor Jesse Ventura. On May 7th, a wolf float brought an outpouring of howls and cheers from a crowd of 50,000 in the Twin Cities Heart of the Beast Parade. The float consisted of a coffin on a wagon draped with wolf pelts and a big trap on top. Supporters dressed as wolves, a raven, and a deer carried signs in the shape of tombstones chanting slogans such as, "Tell Ventura to stop the war on wolves." Unfortunately, the Minnesota House didn't take much notice, and on May 10th, by an 87-44 vote, they passed Wisconsin Bill 3046, the wolf management bill that effectively creates a bounty of $150 for each wolf trapped in predator control areas. According to the Duluth Tribune, the bill would allow shooting wolves at any time in much of the state to protect livestock, pets, and guard animals. With illegal wolf kills already high, opponents feel that this language will let wolf haters get away with killing any wolf they can find. The fate of the wolf in Minnesota is in the hands of Governor Jesse Ventura. Send him your comments via phone. His number is 651-296-3391. That's 651-296-3391. Or how about an 800 number, 800-657-3717. Once again, 800-657-3717. Or you can send email via the internet. Go to www.mainserver.state.mn.us/governor/email_form.html. I'll repeat that once again. www.mainserver.state.mn.us/governor/email_form.html. And down in Arizona, biologists have recaptured a reintroduced Mexican gray wolf that appeared to threaten a rancher on horseback. The Campbell Blue Pack encountered the rancher and his six dogs on April 14th in the Apache Sitgreaves National Forest. The pack, including a mated pair of adult wolves and two yearling females, began fighting with the dogs, and the rancher was able to frighten the two yearling wolves away. The adult pair remained in the area, and the female wolf charged at the horse, bumping it with her shoulders and front feet. Neither the horse nor the rancher were harmed in the encounter, but one of the dogs sustained minor injuries. The Mexican Gray Wolf Interagency Field Team believes the wolves were protecting their territory and perhaps a kill from the dogs and were not focused on the rancher. However, the behavior towards the horse with a mounted rider was not considered acceptable, and the alpha female will not be re-released. The yearling pups have been returned to an acclimation pen in the forest, and the team will attempt to reunite them with the alpha male. The Campbell Blue male is one of the two remaining animals from the first 11 released in Arizona in 1998. The Campbell Blue male's first mate was shot after producing the first known wild pup in the recovery program. The male was unable to rear the pup alone. His second mate was killed by a mountain lion. The two succeeding mates, including the female captured in late April, demonstrated undesirable behaviors resulting in their return to captivity. Now, why is defending your territory an unacceptable behavior? Well, who's training these wolves anyway? Environmental groups are declaring a major victory for rare native fish in Utah. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service has asked the Nuclear Regulatory Commission to reassess its plan for groundwater cleanup and endangered species protection at the Atlas Uranium Tailings Dump in Moab. The dump, which is located on the banks of the Colorado River, is leaching deadly amounts of ammonia and other toxic contaminants into the river and jeopardizing the survival of the endangered Colorado pike minnow and the razorback sucker. In 1998, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service signed off on an NRC plan to place a clay cap on the dump and leave it next to the banks of the river based on the assumption that groundwater cleanup would take place. The plan did not address how to clean up poisonous discharges of ammonia and other toxic contaminants that are jeopardizing the survival of the fish, so the Grand Canyon Trust, Grand County, Utah, and the Sierra Club and a number of river outfitters in Moab filed suit against the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to challenge its authorization of the plan. With a court ruling expected next week, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service sent a letter to the NRC indicating that its biological opinion authorized the plan inadequately addressed groundwater cleanup and asked for a renewal of consultation. It is better the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service reinitiate consultation than have a court order requiring it. And in news from Southern California, three eco groups have filed a lawsuit to unravel the monstrous Playa Vista Bellona Wetlands project. The groups have discovered a just-released City of Los Angeles report on the project's explosive methane gas problem that documents the two methane blowouts that occurred for a 24-hour period in March of this year, spewing mud and gas 40 feet in the air. The report's authors recommend that nothing be built on the land with these huge methane seeps, especially residences for 30,000 people, as the developers plan. The report shows the explosive gas is seeping out of a nearby gas storage project, including the site once proposed of the new DreamWorks movie studio on the state-owned Parcel C. The three groups, the Grassroots Coalition, Earthways Foundation, and the Spirit of the Sage Council, are demanding the city halt the project entirely until a new environmental impact report is completed on the development proposed for the site. If you want more information, you can contact the president of the Save All Bellona Education Project. That number, 310-670-4695. That's 310-670-4695. Or you can go to www.bellona.net. Bellona.net. Get more information about what's happening down there. I believe there's an ongoing daily occupation demonstration and leafleting happening at one of the sites down there in Southern California. Frustrated by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers' failure to reform the Missouri River Dam operations, two conservation groups warned the Corps that they will file a lawsuit to protect three endangered and threatened species, the two birds, the interior least tern, and the piping plover, and a fish, the pallid sturgeon, are threatened by dam operations designed to support barge navigation between Sioux City and St. Louis. This according to the Environmental Defense and American Rivers. The Corps has consistently failed to implement or even consider dam reforms to satisfy the Endangered Species Act, according to Chad Smith, director of American Rivers Missouri River Field Office. In the next few months, the Corps has a window of opportunity to meet the modern needs of the Mississippi River Basin, but that window is closing. And a federal judge has ruled that the U.S. Forest Service must review its process for determining the economic value of timber harvest in national forests. The ruling by U.S. District Judge William Sessions will allow environmental groups to proceed with a lawsuit challenging the way the U.S. Forest Service weighs the costs and benefits of logging. Friends of the Earth filed the suit in December of 1998, charging the U.S. Forest Service is required by law to consider all the costs of logging, including effects on wildlife, watershed protection, and tourism. That case, which challenged four timber sales in Vermont's Green Mountain National Forest, is now pending in the U.S. District Court in Burlington, Vermont. The U.S. Forest Service and timber industry groups have succeeded in having two of the four timber sales on which the suit is based dismissed because logging on two tracts had already been completed. Last week, Judge Sessions ruled the U.S. Forest Service must review its cost-benefit analyses for the remaining two sales. The court will then consider the case with a more clear understanding of the record, the judge wrote in his decision. The lawsuit could determine the fate of all timber sales in each of the nation's 155 national forests. And in news from New Zealand, the New Zealand Labour government introduced legislation that will end the logging of all publicly owned temperate rainforests in New Zealand and transfer them to national parks or other preservation reserves. These rainforests will go into the conservation estate and will be there in perpetuity for their intrinsic value and, of course, for the ongoing benefit of the visitor and tourist industry on the West Coast, said New Zealand's Prime Minister Helen Clark. Public attitudes to logging in publicly owned indigenous forests have changed markedly, Pete Hodgson says, the New Zealand minister responsible for timberlands. These lowland forests are considered by many New Zealanders to be a unique and significant part of our natural heritage, too valuable for logging of any sort to continue. That's about all the time we have for news and announcements. If you want to get news or announcements from your bioregion to Earth First Radio, send them to us by email. Our email address is cruzef@cruzio.com. That's cruzef@cruzio.com. Or you want to go snail mail? It's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Once again, that's Earth First Radio, P.O. Box 344, Santa Cruz, California, 95061. Please, 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 please be sure to send those announcements at least 3 weeks in advance. If you want more in-depth news and information about the Earth First movement, subscribe to the Earth First Journal. It's easy. They're P.O. Box 1415 in Eugene, Oregon, 97440. Once again, that's the Earth First Journal, P.O. Box 1415, Eugene, Oregon, 97440. And the first issue is free. You can listen to Earth First Radio on your computer on the World Wide Web at www.radioforall.net. That's www.radio4all.net. You'll need a sound card in your computer, but the software you need to play the MP3 files is free on the website. And you can also hear us streaming audio from Santa Cruz, California. www.microradio.net/FRSC. www.microradio.net/FRSC. And Earth First Radio is carried on a growing number of free speech and non-commercial radio stations. Please ask your local station to rebroadcast Earth First Radio. Earth First Radio is produced in the studios of Free Radio Santa Cruz. Our theme music was written and performed by Daryl Cherney from the CD Keep It Wild. I'm Uncle Dennis. I want to thank you for listening to Earth First Radio. And now we're going to listen to a little bit of Judy Berry.
There once was an Earth First.